What does it mean to be president of the Women's Health Section? What is that role?
My first job was doing home care in North and West Philly. And I am here because somebody asked me to do something in an elevator in Las Vegas. Having my ortho background really enhances my understanding of when I am doing internal, what am I actually trying to get out of that? And that was something I struggled with when I was kind of treating them as two separate entities for a really long time. And I said, well, how do you dip your toe in this cash-based thing? And had a little hashtag Mama Kate Mafia about the benefits of having moms work in your practice and, you know, be a part of your business because they hustle and there's data to show that. If you think you want to do something, but you just don't know how, start.
This is Maestro on the Mic,
a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me the Dr. Carrie Pagliano. If you don't know that name, you're about to. I'm super pumped to have her on. She actually popped her head up in the hashtag P4520 group that I started on Facebook. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I'm in the presence of royalty here. So without further ado, my friends, welcome to the show, Dr. Carrie Pagliano.
Wow, that was quite an intro. Thank you.
I feel like I need to get like one of those buttons that like puts the cheering crowd in the background. Like, yeah.
That works. That like, works.
Because I get pumped when I'm like, this is exciting. Thank you for coming on, Carrie.
No, thank you. I'm glad we got this to work out.
Yeah, you're a busy woman and you squeeze some time and I truly appreciate it. But let's jump right in because you are busy. The guests know, you know, I don't love reading bios because it's kind of boring. So why don't you tell us what you want us to know.
First and foremost, I am a mom and a wife. I have amazing family that I can't do what I do without them. So they always come first. I've been a PT for, I guess, 18 years now, and I've been in the DC area for 17. Didn't think I would stay here. My husband's from here. We're still here. I don't think we're going anywhere anytime soon, which is great. And I've kind of hopped around a little bit. I initially started out maybe thinking about, I'll just do regular PT. Thought maybe I'd do med school for a little bit and changed my mind and eventually fell into pelvic health and realized, I was doing orthopedics primarily, that pelvic health was really orthopedics in a warm, dark place. And they belong together. And that's kind of where I've been ever since. So I've done a little bit of everything, run a residency, start a curriculum. I do a lot with APTA. One of their media reps. And then Women's Health Section, I've kind of done a lot with them over the years and actually am president now. So kind of working.
Did you guys hear that? Hold on. You glossed over that. You're like, it also kind of. Dude, you guys out there hear that? President of that section. That's like a really big deal, Carrie. Like,
it's good. I have a great team. I have an amazing board. I have an amazing executive director. They also, super supportive. We have a great membership. It's so many things that I've done over the years have been just so complimentary to each other. I mean, I never woke up one day and said, oh, hey, I want to be president, or I want to run a residency, or I want to do this or that. Yeah. These things that just kind of organically come when you find stuff that you love to do. So
what does it mean to be president of the Women's Health Section? What is that role?
It's one of those things. I've been on our board, gosh, I think 4 or 5 years now. I was 2 years in secretary, 2 years in vice president, and finishing up my first year as president. And I think being a steward of an organization we're a $1 million nonprofit with almost 3,500 members. I mean, to be able to have that honor of representing not only your field, but those members. I mean, it's such a massive honor, but I've learned so much about how to run an organization, how to communicate and convey leadership and work as a team and work strategically and understand finances and budget and all those other things. I mean, it's just, all of it has been complementary to everything else I've ever done kind of in my career. So
it makes me so happy to hear that you're at the helm of this. Just, I mean, knowing your background and reading up on you and listening to you on podcasts and just, you know, AKA, it's a nice way of saying stalking you. It's not really at all, right? I'm like, it's out there. So it's comforting to know what's in the leadership role, because we are so far removed from those people, and you don't really know, like, what are their beliefs? What are they moving towards? Right. What's their life like? I love that you share so much of who you are, and actually you led with the fact that you are a mom and a wife, and that you're a human. It's very comforting to hear that, and also that you do CrossFit.
Yes. Right? Like, all the things.
It's really like, okay, like, this is who's leading us. This is going in a very, very good direction.
No, I'm excited too. I mean, just to see where where I started out, and you know, I kind of had that same view. When you look at something as big as our organization, and I just wanted to do something. I didn't know where to begin, and I am here because somebody asked me to do something in an elevator in Las Vegas. Like, that's literally why I'm here. And I mean,
wow,
that's so many things with so many people. Is you show up. And you talk to people, and you are who you are, and you know that's how things happen. Or at least I've been fortunate that that's been the case for me.
I totally agree.
But it's show up, you know,
and it
just takes one ask. But you know, I remember looking at people that were my idols when I was first starting out, and these people are my friends now, and so smart, and you just want to pick their brains, and they're so open to sharing what they know. I kind of feel the same way, like pay it forward as much as you possibly can and, learn from our experiences and our pathways and not that, we want mini clones, like there should not be a mini me.
For sure. Yeah.
But the closest should be my daughter, but, we don't want mini me's. We want you to find the best version of you. And if we can find a way for our experiences to help you along, the better, all the better.
So. Collaboration, not competition. I couldn't agree more, man. And show up. Like, people, that's it. Like, show up. I have to kind of back it up a little bit, though, because you just said that somebody asked you to do something in an elevator in Vegas, and then you left the story at that. And that's
it's well. No, it was Susan, we'll clarify, just because we don't want this story to be bigger than it actually is. Thanks for playing that back.
That's the name of the episode. What happens in Vegas? ...
Well, I brought my daughter when she was 6 months to CSM because I was speaking with Sandy Felton and Laura Mosley, and I was like, I can't leave her at home. So my poor husband dragged my 6-month-old daughter, and the poor guy, like, he's carrying her around Vegas, and apparently you can't take babies anywhere in Vegas. And he's got her in like a little baby Bjorn. And so everybody's making hangover jokes, the whole thing. So Vegas has a beautiful spot in my heart.
Right?
No, but to clarify, Susan Giglio, who was a PT in Louisiana, she's out in Oregon now. She was on our nominating committee for the section of women's health. And she turned to me in an elevator and said, do you want to run for nominating committee? And I said, I don't know what that is, but sure. And that kind of turned into, a couple years on that committee and, hey, do you want to run for secretary? I'm like, I'm organized. I could do that.
Yeah.
And that turned into, hey, do you want to, run for vice president? Well, okay, that's fine. And then the one where, hey, do you want to run for president? That took a little bit more, that decision had quite a bit more gravity. And it's a lot more, I don't know that, other than, do you want to get married? Do you want to have kids? Like, those are pretty, massive questions. This wasn't at that level, but it was up there.
It's big.
Big. It's a lot of time and a lot of commitment. And, and interestingly enough, at the time that I ran, it was before I started my kind of entrepreneurial journey. So the way that the calendars actually worked out, I started looking into you know, maybe doing a practice or leaving hospital care probably, I guess, about a year ago in July. And just the way the dates worked out, I took office for president at CSM on a Friday, and I came home and I had my first day in clinic in my private practice on the following Tuesday.
When it rains, it pours.
I wouldn't recommend that.
All in.
and I mean, that goes back to, too, like, you know, the best laid plans. You couldn't have told me, you know, a year and a half ago that that's how this would all have played out. And, you know, you want to do more, you want to do better, but you can't always calculate, hey, I'm going to do this now, I'm going to do this now, because sometimes it's out of your control. You got to take advantage of the opportunities as they arise.
Take advantage of the moment, man. Show up, put in the work. This is incredible to hear. I'd love to tease out a little bit, because I know your backstory, but
yeah.
You dropped it a little bit there, that you switched from hospital setting to private practice. Can you talk about working in the hospital? Because it's pretty, it's actually kind of non-traditional how you did it.
Well, and to back it up even more, I mean, I came out in 99, and anybody who graduated then, that's like the year of managed care, and the bottom dropped out of our market, basically.
Uh-huh.
The year before, it was 100% placement. There was, you know, a ton of kids coming out of school. And my class, I graduated from University of Sciences in Philadelphia. There were 60 in my class, and on graduation, six of us had jobs.
Wow.
Which was not what we had planned. My first job was doing home care in North and West Philly. And if you know Philly and you know where the Badlands are, that's where I used to work for about 2.5 months, and I cried every day.
Carrie's got stories.
So, so I went back home to upstate New York and actually worked in a small rural hospital for about a year and a half and just kind of laid low. Thought I might go to med school because, you know, where I was working, we were just doing, you know, 17 forms of dianthermia and ultrasound and seeing a ton of patients, and it wasn't doing it for me. The market opened up, moved to DC. I worked at a hospital for another year and a half, tried management for a year and a half, then decided, oh wait, I'm not going to med school. I don't want to go to school that much longer.
More school, exactly.
And then fell into a private practice in Arlington for about 4 years, where I basically started over and did my transitional doctorate at St. Augustine and OCS and kind of all the ortho things at that point, and really wasn't wanting to do women's health, and really got pushed a little bit more into it than I thought that I wanted. And it wasn't until I left there to go over, I was at Georgetown for about 11 years at the hospital in DC, that I wanted to do just pelvic health because it put me in a room by myself for an hour, which I had been used to in private practice. Okay. But all of a sudden, you know, they were, because I was PRN, they're like, okay, do whatever you want to do. And that allowed me to kind of, you know, have the permission to build my own concierge practice, which I don't think that happens in a lot of hospitals. And so I was able to do that for the better part of probably the first 8 of the 11 years I was there. And really, it was such great timing because I worked for a couple of years, kind of worked up to full time, started thinking about a residency, had my oldest son, had my daughter, and then they decided they wanted me to do the residency. So here I am.
To create one, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, I had already created about it. Creating. Like, it was ready to go. Like, it was ready to go.
You just made it in your spare time, Carrie?
I do things like that. I know.
What? I'm over here like, I made an Instagram post, and you're like, yeah, baby.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, it's like, I have a whole appreciation for, you know, people that go down that rabbit hole.
Wow.
So yeah, I was PRN running a residency, and my first resident was PRN, and we actually had a really great time. And then gradually, as we, you know, as the program started to grow, I needed more of a commitment from the program, you know, to have, you know, full or part-time, and just wasn't getting that. So we only had one resident go through, and that was, you know, unfortunate, but had some management changes, and slowly kind of the concierge-ness was not working as much anymore with that. And so that was when I kind of knew, like, the kids are getting a little bit bigger. They're starting to get preschool age. My oldest was in kindergarten. I'm like, all right, well, what am I going to do? Something needs to change. And I remember asking a friend, Ryan Smith, who he owns Reese Church up in Columbia, Maryland. And I said, well, how do you dip your toe in this cash-based thing? And he kind of laughed at me and he's like, you don't. And I'm like, well, I kind of, why not, you know?
And, yeah, why not? I'm Carrie.
Yeah, right?
I can make a residency in my spare time. I can do whatever I want.
And, what talking about? No, it was just one of those things. I'm like, I know things. I should be able to do stuff. And
yeah.
You know, the background here is, again, I've been here a really long time. Really was able to have a nice kind of independent hospital-based practice when probably less than 25% of my referrals were in-house. And I'll probably more than half of my patients were coming from Virginia and not DC. And, you know, I've lived in Arlington 16 of the 17 years. I'm like, wait, why are we both crossing bridges here?
Mm-hmm. How did they find you though? This was like word of mouth.
Martin, how are they? Yeah. I mean, and part of it, again, I've been here for a long time, but it's, you know, it's moms groups, it's physicians that know me, you know, it's just gyms that know me or Pilates or yoga studios, or it's just one of those things. And, you know, I don't need to have every single patient in the world, but you know, if you get, you know, 30 referral sources that know you and one, and they send you one patient a year, I mean, things start to add up. But I just started doing a little bit of home base just within, you know, a couple miles of my house. Cause I was still working just a couple days a week at the hospital and, you know, spending time with the kids when they were done with preschool. But, I realized very quickly, and this is understanding, I started in home care, so I understand how it works. I don't want to kneel on people's floors anymore. I'm too old for that.
Right? Like, that's terrible.
and I knew I wanted a space, but I wasn't sure. I started to realize the more people I talked to that wanted to share space, that in the process of them wanting to talk to me about it, they were talking themselves out of it. That they wanted their space more, or, oh, maybe actually I won't have 2 days for you. Maybe it'll only be this. And my husband would agree with this statement. I do like things my way sometimes.
sometimes. Just sometimes. Not all the time.
But not
sometimes.
All the time. I'm so much better now.
all the time sometimes.
But I think I hesitated for so long to leave hospital-based because I love the flexibility and I like having options to change and shift gears. Like, you know, when I parked in a parking lot at work, I would park on the top level so I wouldn't get double parked in. So if I had to leave when my kids needed me, I could go. Like, that's the kind of flexibility that I like. Yeah. And so, you know, it's one of those stories. It's such a cliche that if you give something space, it will come to you. And I kid you not, it was like Thanksgiving weekend. I was walking down the street. There was a yard sale 2 blocks from my house. And I said to the guys, I was like, hey, you know, are you guys moving out? It was this bottom floor of a garden style, you know, 1930s apartment building. And they're like, oh, no, we own the place. I'm like, oh, it's such a shame. You know, there used to be a massage therapist in there. That would have been the perfect space. And the guy says to me, he's like, oh, we got one in the back. And I'm like, what is this, Walmart? Like, you've got one in the back.
Right, exactly.
You
have a whole space in the
back. I know. I'm like, and, you know, I've lived up the road for like 5 years. I mean, what are you talking about? Like, I live 3 blocks away. And so he shows me this space that's literally floor to ceiling, like some Burroughs chemistry books. Like, there's a bit, like, just... crap. And I don't know what made me be like, and I was like, well, if you guys ever want to rent it, let me know. And I told my husband, he's like, okay. And probably 3 or 4 days later, I was like, I have to call them. So I called them up, went over with my husband, and we looked at it again. And again, full credit to my husband, why he doesn't look at me and be like, what the hell are you thinking? There's some sombreros in here. And we're walking around the building and my landlord picks up a little button, like, you know, a button, like a campaign button or something that you would put on your coat or something. And it says, got inspiration. And he handed it to me. And I have that framed in my office now because I'm like, if you see the pictures of what this place used to look like, you would have to have inspiration.
She had a vision.
So, I mean, the nice thing, though, is I've been able to be kind of, I had over the years set up, I know how much patient care I like to do. I know what the time commitment is that I want to spend with my kids. the time commitment for the association, kind of the all the other stuff that I want to do. And having the flexibility to do it and, you know, having it right here and serving my immediate community. And when you have kids of school age, like, you really are in the thick of it. And it's so nice that I'm right next to my CrossFit box. So my friends are right there. My community is right here. Like, I'm kind of living the dream, but there's part of me still that's like, okay, yeah. What do I want to be when I grow up? Like, what's next? Like, that's great here. What can this possibly, how many more people can I impact? So it's a little of how my brain works, but that's kind of the backstory. But I remember going in the hospital based, and if you've been to Georgetown to the hospital, like, it's an old hospital. But I remember walking in, coming from private practice, being like, what the hell? Who goes from private practice to hospital based? And I, you know, it was just the right situation. I was able to, there's so much that hospital based can learn from private practice, and so much that private practice can learn from hospital based. And I feel like I was really in a position that I could kind of benefit from both, and had worked in a hospital before, so it wasn't super scary. But no, it's not for everybody. Just like, you know, private practice isn't for everybody. Hospital based isn't for everybody either. So,
Man, there's so much that you just dropped in that story. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm like sitting here like, my podcast is always about the bigger picture. And I love when people's nuances and the details of their story just dovetail so nicely into what the bigger picture is of one. Like you just said, ask. Like, yes, you went to a state sale, garage sale. And then you asked if that, you know, if you're ever looking for something, for someone to rent it. And then you went back again and you called, you asked, you initiated that. So the universe put something, you put it out there, the universe put something back out there. And then you went again and asked. You can't just sit there and be like, why is nothing happening? It's like, because you're doing nothing. So that's why nothing's happening. And then never settle. Like, I love that you're like, I'm doing great. Life is really good. I'm reaching my goals, but I'm also looking and saying, how else can I help? How else can I lead with light? How else can I lead with service? How else can I do more? And like, this is why I brought you on. This made me so happy. And you talk about Georgetown, Hoya Sacks. I love it. Like, this is amazing. So in terms of, you also spoke about your local community. You do a lot with just local community, but community in general. You have a Facebook group too. And what's that about?
And that actually goes back. Dana Matei, who obviously you've had on, he and I are virtual friends. I started listening to him, I think when his podcast dropped last summer. And it was only because one of my very best friends from PT school, Lauren Sox, she's got functionized physical therapy in Georgia, outside Atlanta. She was one of his first podcast people, and she kind of took a little bit different route than I had, and had, you know, really known that she wanted to go private practice, and she's had her practice now a couple of years and really has a set plan on where she wants to go. And the more I was kind of listening to her, and the more I was listening to Danny, and then a couple of years ago, a couple of my very good friends, Karen Brannon, Cecily DiStefano, and Jenny Gablesberg, we did a presentation at CSM and had a little hashtag Mama Kate Mafia about the benefits of having moms work in your practice and, you know, be a part of your business, and because they hustle and there's data to show that. And so really it was kind of pulling all this stuff together. And I gradually started to realize that there's such a huge growth of women, and particularly moms, that are doing these side hustles. And part of it is because they want the flexibility to be with their kids, and our profession kind of affords that. And if you have a supportive spouse that kind of handles all the insurance, you know, health insurance aspect of it, it really opens up a lot of opportunities. And so we decided to create this PT Mompreneurs Facebook group. And I think we're up to like 350 members now. And we literally, like, it's sharing everything from, you know, what intake software do you use to how do you manage, you know, getting reliable childcare. And, you know, it's the things that are, they're unique to entrepreneurs, but very much PT ones that are, you know, dealing with the things that come along with, you know, taking care of kids and also being a primary caregiver. So,
yes.
So we started that group, and it's really been a lot of fun. And just people that understand your pain points and, you know, finding your tribe, that whole thing. But it's been such a labor of love, and to be able to do that with my very good friend, mm-hmm. and really kind of, it makes me kind of go full circle. But if it weren't for, you know, listening to Danny, if it weren't for talking to my friend Lauren, if it weren't for, you know, all these other things, like I was able to reach out last year to former students that have gone into private practice right out of school, and they were so helpful. Like all the connections, yes. that you make, and we were talking earlier, yes. about, you know, what a small world it's gotten to be and how many resources that we have at our fingertips with those people that you have, you know, either in person or virtual, really strong relationships with.
And connection. Life is all about connection.
Well, who wants to do it alone? You know,
right? You think it's like common sense. Like, come on,
yeah.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah,
for sure. Especially, you know, social media. I champion it all the time, but that's one of the main reasons, because it does afford you this connection in an instant. It's at your fingertips with people everywhere.
Exactly. Like
that suddenly your community becomes that much bigger, but also physically that much smaller. So it's incredible.
Yeah.
You know? I wanted to. Tease out a little bit, since you segued so nicely. How is this entrepreneur life treating you? What's that like?
Well, I'm still a newbie. I spent my morning today with my profit and loss statement. So I'm still learning about that. I'm still learning about taxes, all the things that, you know.
Right? That's the scary stuff. You're like,
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't know about this. I need to find people who do.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
it.
Yes.
For me, it's been a lot about, I've been super fortunate. I've been able to fill my schedule from day one. And you know, the sorts of things that are challenges to new practice owners. Some I've been able to, again, when you have those roots, it's a lot easier to be able to do that. But for me, it's actually been kind of creating boundaries. Like this summer was a whole new experiment, because my kids don't go to camp over the summer. They're home. Exactly. We've had amazing childcare for the last 6 years, but we needed to find a new person this summer. So finding reliable childcare on the days that I was going to see patients, making sure, that when I was home, I was present with the kids. But also making sure, and this part was actually pretty hard for me. I would have my patient care days, but I blocked a morning for about 6 hours to just come in and do admin. And I felt bad about it. Cause I'm one of those moms. I'm like, well, if I'm not like with patients, I should be with my kids. Well, there's that in between too, you know? And it ended up being, I think there was only one or two days that ended up being like actual sit down, do paperwork sorts of things. Like I ended up filling up with, was able to do a couple podcasts. I was able to have some meetings, that kind of stuff. But I was so thankful that I had given myself that space. And I think one of the things that really can get entrepreneurs right off the bat is you're trying so hard to get patients in the door that you spend the whole time with your head down seeing patients, and you don't give yourself space to be strategic, to understand your finances, to be able to kind of make those big picture decisions, which interestingly enough, in my role as president, that's one of the things that we've been able to elevate ourselves to. Instead of having our heads down, to be able to pull up, use data, make decisions, look forward. And as PTs, we're doers, you know? For me, it's been seasonally understanding. Like my kids went back to school last week, so I'm like, oh, I can breathe now.
Wow. Man, I'm like overwhelmed just listening. I'm like, and I have no kids. I have two plants that I'm like trying my hardest to keep alive. And I'm like,
all my plants in my office, other than my bamboo, like I had real ones and now they're dead. So they're all fake now.
Man. Exactly. The fake plants. Exactly. I'm like, give me more fake plants. These are terrible. I can't be dealing with this.
My
remote controlled vacuum almost jumped off the freaking balcony the other day. And I'm like, what is happening?
No.
How do people have kids?
No,
can't control the vacuum.
Mine sends like little distress, my robot thing, my vacuum sends distress signals to my husband because I can't figure out how to get it to talk to my phone.
I'm like, what? what is going on with this? It's being crazy. It's outside all of a sudden.
No, I understand.
So what is a typical, like, what, how do they do with live humans?
Yeah.
So what is like a typical, I was going to say what a typical day looked like for you, but I imagine each day changes.
It's different. And I mean, I probably like, I'm much more stable now that the kids are in school. So, I mean, my typical treatment days are Tuesday, Thursday, and then I'm sprinkling in now that the kids are back. If I've got somebody that's emergent or I know it's going to be a one-time thing, I can sprinkle in Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I have protected time for my workouts, and I think that's super important. So I go to CrossFit, I would say usually twice a week, and we have a 9:30 group here at Patriot CrossFit that just a phenomenal group community of parents. So it's at 9:30. We drop our kids off. We come, we work out. We have a great time. And for me, you know, CrossFit walking in the door was intimidating anyway. So the fact that I'm not with a bunch of 20 somethings with their shirts off, like that's good. No one wants to see that with me. So, I mean, but that's my community too, that, you know, when I had an office opening, they came over, we had mimosas, you know, that's my support community. Yes. And to be able to make that connection, it's important for me to be there to work out, but it's also important for me to keep that community connection. So usually I have my protected CrossFit time, and then usually a couple conference calls during the week. I try and keep as many as I can during the day when the kids are at school. But like last night, we had an executive committee call for Women's Health Section that we have once a month. And, you know, try not to do things at bedtime as much as you can. And then most of my stuff, like I might have meetings or see a couple patients. I'm usually leaving to go pick up the kids about 3:30, and then as much as I can between 3:30 and bedtime, that's, you know, dinner prep, get them ready for tomorrow. You know, I'm trying not to overschedule them, but also, you know, have them burn off a little energy and, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But I'm up early. Like I'm a 5 a.m. girl. I know you were laughing at me.
Yeah, so you said in that email. I was like,
that's it. That's in my DNA. That's my parents' fault. But for me, that's my quiet time.
So
I get up, I do my Headspace app. I do my planning for the day. My friend Jenny has got me looking into this, like, I can't remember. It's like a meaningful morning thing, whatever. So you do a little bit of your reading in the morning, do a little writing. And I used to love to write. I mean, my dad was an English teacher, so that's kind of ingrained in me. And reading for me, I go to bed after the kids go to bed because I got up at 5. And I can usually get a couple pages in before I fall asleep. And it makes it very hard to get through a book.
Yes, like 3 pages tonight.
And I'll vacillate between, you know, business books or, you know, journals or, you know, random other, you know, things. But and then they're usually up you know, after 7, so at that point we switch gears into to get ready for school mode, and I drop them off 3 days a week. We have help 2 days a week, and then I pick them up every day. So that part is such a gift. And, you know, again, I'm functioning in a 1/2 mile radius, so I get my walking in, which is nice. But to be able to have that flexibility, I have to pinch myself and stop and kind of reflect sometimes, because you get so focused in your day, like, oh, I'm doing this, and this, to be able to stop and say, how many people do you know get to pick up their kids every day and be there for them when they come home and do the things that my mom was able to do? You know, we had very different, you know, ways that we treated our career, but there's certain things that you want to keep going with, and to be able to have that contact with them has been huge.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Do you work on the weekends, Carrie?
No, ma'am. No.
Look at that. Look at that. Listen to that, folks. She does not work on the weekends.
Now, see, my husband would probably disagree, because, you know, sometimes if the kids aren't up, sure, I might run my, you know, my reconciliation for the week or something like that. But
there's no patient care on the weekends.
No. And that's one of those things that's kind of hard to stop once you have kids, because they've got, you know, swimming or birthday parties or try and keep it for family things. And with my travel, that's actually been a little bit of a challenge, and learning to say no and being okay with it. Because there's so many things you want to do. And there's such cool stuff out there and places you want to travel, but really trying to make sure that I'm only out of town once a month. And that I got that advice actually from Lorimer Maltzley. I talked to him a couple years ago out in Chicago. And, you know, everybody's asking him all these amazing pain questions.
Pain science questions, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, and he has a couple kids. And I was like, how do you do this? Yeah. And, you know, he said, you know, I'm very cognizant of when I'm home, I'm home. And, you know, I limit when I'm out, I'm out. But just having some boundaries there. And it's, I think for entrepreneurs, it's hard because it's hard to shut that off.
Yeah,
you're always thinking about that. And the kids think the office is cool, but they really don't, you know, care about P&L statements. maybe one of them will be a math nerd someday and help me out with that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's constantly reminding yourself, okay, there are some boundaries. Yes, I would totally love to go be with those people and do that course and do that thing, but I have to choose here.
That's huge. I think that's one of the things for me too, I struggle with that, where you get more this flexibility and this freedom, but then that's more hours that you can fill with things you want to fill or you think you should be doing, or just so much more. And then you're like, but you have to say no to certain things.
Yeah.
It is just as much of a blessing. It is just as difficult. So for sure. Yeah. Patient hours, then you're done by 3:30. So you're seeing people like during the day.
Yeah, I start at 7. So we've always had the days that I work, we've always had help start early. So they would start at like 6:30, 7 o'clock. So I'm not even there when they get there, which actually as a parent is awesome, because if your kids don't see you, they'll listen exactly to what the other person says. Kid management tip.
That's amazing.
I start seeing patients at 7 and then kind of run right through. I do give myself a little bit of break to kind of keep up with my paperwork. So at the end of the day, I'm not bringing that home. And you know, my load's not a lot. I mean, I'm seeing probably average 13 to 16 patients a week. It's not, you know, it's not a ton, but for me, that's kind of the sweet spot that I found.
That's a lot for me.
Because I mean, the stuff that goes with that, you know, besides the paperwork, and that's the thing people don't realize, you know, when they're thinking about cash-based or entrepreneurialism is, oh, I can make this much money. Well, yeah, you still have to do your paperwork. You got to do your bills, and you've got to do your finances, and you have to answer emails and kind of all that other stuff. And you've got to make sure that you're not doing
that.
Make
it run.
Exactly.
It has to actually run. It's not just treatment. Right. So you found that, patients can figure out how to come and see you during the day.
Yes.
They can do that. I feel like PTs tend to think, I know when I first started working, I was just blown away, like the alternating schedule they'd give us of like, you'd work 7 to 3 on Monday, 12 to 8 on Tuesday. And I was like, why are you doing this? Why can't I just work the same time every day? And they're like, for flexibility. And I was like, but if they came in for their eval at 7, they're probably going to come in the rest of the time at that. Why am I going this crazy schedule? And I feel like as PTs, we like to like bend over backwards, which is great. We want to be accommodating and help people. I love it. But again, like you said before, setting boundaries, like dentists are amazing. They work like 1 hour of the day and yet somehow you figure out how to go, right?
And you write them a big check and they're totally, you're totally fine with
it. Right? You're just like, how is this? What is this model? We're opening from 12:30 to 12:32. And you're like, okay, I'll see you.
You know what though? I think it depends on knowing your audience and kind of who you're after. Like for me, you know, part of my audience is stay-at-home moms or moms that are
for sure.
So I've always filled those 7 a.m. appointments because people want to come in before work.
Before work, yeah.
And interestingly enough though, I've had a run on basically between 9 and about 11:30. And what that is are moms that their kids are in preschool. And they have about 3 hours and they need to do, and I've been that mom, so I understand it. You want to bang every single thing out that you can that might be completely blown up by a child in those 3 hours and be able to run in and grab your kid and be good. And so it's one of those things, like my demographic is not, you know, that they want to come after work kind of one.
Yes.
And I've had people ask, and the nice thing is, again, too, I have friends that do evening hours. So, you know, I had somebody that, you know, was in school, and we tried to work it out and she's basically in school from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And I said, with your current schedule, it's not going to match, but I do know somebody that's nearby you that works evenings. And I think that'll work better for you now. So, I mean, for me, if I can give you an alternative, without bending over backwards, you know, and it's going to work for both of us, that's fine.
There you go. I mean, so there's so many points there, so many good points there. One, just in general, from an entrepreneurial standpoint or any kind of marketing standpoint, know your audience. Yeah. So know who you're marketing towards and when what they need. So for those of you guys listening that maybe are going for a different demographic, if you're like, well, how do I balance that then? Well, then maybe you're not working during the middle of the day and you're working right. at nighttime. And those are the hours that you're offering so that during the middle of the day, you're doing other things,
exactly.
you know, whatever's part you can fit in for your business. Yeah. And then the second point that was huge, refer out, share.
Yes,
like people get so like, if I lose this person,
yeah.
like refer out, set boundaries, understand that one of the best gifts you can give to someone is helping them. And if you refer someone out and they get better, they will still refer people
yeah.
to you. They're going to be like, I couldn't see this person, but they were so helpful. And these are the hours that they have. Like
yeah.
it all comes back.
And that
back.
I think is a big change as well. I mean, you know, considering I was working for a private practice, you know, 15 years ago, it was very much scarcity mentality. And you were trying to compete with mm-hmm. the hospitals. And I think it's just changed now because I have plenty of people that I refer to the hospital that's less than a mile from here. And the therapists there, you know, are great. But if you want this other experience yes. that I can provide, then I'm going to be your person, you know. But it's just abundance. If I can't mm-hmm. help you, then I've got a list of people. I mean, there's enough people to go around. There's enough patients to go around. And the more that we can kind
yes.
of work together, it's just going to end up being better for everybody.
Abundance mindset. Yes.
Abundance.
Yes, Gary.
I've talked about that with Danny. I was like, I totally, this whole scarcity thing, mine is mine. Yours is yours. No, let's do it all together.
All
better together, baby.
Together, right? Better together. Speaking of together, you work with like strength and conditioning coaches, PT, mm-hmm. PTs, you're a PT. What am I looking for? What's the word? CrossFit coaches, things like
yeah.
that.
It's one of my favorite things to do. And I did a CrossFit class, oh gosh, it was a couple years ago now with Anthony Lowe.
Ah, yes.
And I basically did it because I was getting a lot of patients doing CrossFit. And if anybody kind of understands background, public health and CrossFit, like I think it was 2013, there was some video that came out
CrossFit, jeez.
Like everybody's doing forehead slaps. Basically,
yes.
a woman's like, yeah, it's okay to pee when I do double unders, mm-hmm. ask my gynecologist who was right there working out with her. And, you know, all of us just sort of, you know, collective
yes.
groan. And so I went to
yes.
this class thinking, all right, I'll learn what I need to learn. And I walked in and I started talking to this guy and I was like, he sounded really intelligent. And finally I said, oh, well, where'd you go to PT school? And he's like, oh, I'm a trainer. I'm like, what? And I haven't, you know, I've worked with some trainers and I have a colleague of mine, that I work with at Georgetown. He's, Scott Epsley's a PT at the Philadelphia 76ers. Like I've had some good sports exposure, mm-hmm. but this was like, wait a second, this guy's probably the best communicator I've ever, you know, kind of worked with and talked with. He was also like a former Ranger, Ranger.
Okay.
So his name is Richard Fly. He teaches with Anthony sometimes. And, they threw us kind of in a quick workout in the beginning. And one of the things was doing sit-ups. And, you know, mm-hmm. Part of one of the things I talk about with patients is I've got my own bag. Like I had FAI surgery 11 years ago. I've been a runner for uh-huh. forever. Didn't have a great recovery until actually about 2 years ago, when I started CrossFit. ironically,
look at that.
I had some really interesting deliveries with my kids, diastasis, had some leakage issues, like things I have worked through, mm-hmm. SI issues. And so I think he noticed that I was feeling kind of vulnerable doing a sit up and he gave me a 10-pound plate and he's like, well, what if you use this plate? And I looked at him, I'm like, give me a break. Like giving me a plate and telling me to put it over my head and hurling
right.
my body forward. Like, how is that going to work? And I did it and I was like, oh crap, now I have to learn how to do this. but it was such a start to really opening my eyes to strength and conditioning world. And, you know, I've really one of the things I really love to do is learn from other people that were not in the same sandbox
mm-hmm.
and learn from strength and conditioning people, learn from, you know, people that look at problems very differently from me And part of the reason for that is in pelvic health world, like our research isn't great.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to throw research dollars at it like they do low back pain and opioids.
Exactly.
So we're literally learning on the field. And so we're, you know, I try and take concepts that I learned from other areas, sports, ortho, whatever, and try and tweak it just like we did with pain, try and tweak it for our patient population. And ideally, you know, that'll start to inspire some research. But strength and conditioning coaches are super smart and movement coaches are super smart. And, you know, anytime I work with a CrossFitter, I don't claim to know, you know, the exact rules of how to do a particular movement. What I can do is I can tell you where you're breaking down and I can give you a strategy to start to overlay that if we work with your coach between those two things, getting the right technique and giving you the strategy that you need, we can give you a really good result. And that part is so fun because it just clicks for people and they feel like you're working with them instead of, well, my coach told me to do this or my trainer told me to do this, and that whole territory thing. It's back to the abundance. Like, why don't we just work together? And it's so fun and you get to learn so much.
The passion in your voice, the excitement. I'm like, yes, I'm right there with you.
Well, I was telling you, I just had a patient right before we got on here, and you know, an educated professional in the medical field scared for the last 6 months to do movements that she's totally capable of doing. To give somebody that power back and to give them that ability to move smart. And her coach is my coach. And I was like, hey, you know, are you okay if I talk to her? And I'm going to be able to provide her some education so maybe we can, you know, head off problems with somebody else. And it's that whole pay it forward thing too. So, I mean, it's just like share, help.
That's it. Collaboration. So much. I'd like to tease out because I know the people listening want some of the like nuances of like, I don't want to say treatment, but in your experience with let's look at CrossFit combined with pelvic health. And, you know, one of the things that I treated pelvic floor for, I kind of even hesitate to say it that way because I hate looking at it as such a divorced system. It's like it's all part of the same system. So, you know, but I did pelvic floor work for a few years when I was back in New York, and that's actually around the same time I started CrossFit. And so much of what I saw with things was pressure management issues where people like immediately like, let's go poke this person. And you're like, I don't even know if they need that. Like, let's just work on breathing. Like, what have you found? So you can just give like, you know, 10,000 foot view of when we look at CrossFit and the female athlete, or you can put the male athlete in there too, and just the common issues that you're seeing.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's looking at them biomechanically, but also considering how the pressure systems work. And it's, again, I don't think it's anything that we inherently are taught right off the bat in PT school. We're you know, taught lever arms and this and that, but it all kind of comes together in that pressure is going to take path of least resistance. If it's not well controlled or if there's a deficit, you know, just follow the path. And there's so many movements. And this is why I really get upset when, and I used to be this person too. Like, you think CrossFit's just, you know, throwing crap around. I mean, my husband still thinks I'm in a cult, but there's some people I work out with that their movement is just stunning. You know, the freedom that they have in their hips and their back squat, you know, just stunning. And, you know, kipping, I used to look at and be like, well, that doesn't take much to do that. No, the fluidity of movement and the organization and the strategies that have to go along with it. Plus you overlay, how to control pressure systems. And I mean, it's funny now. I feel like pelvic floor land, we've kind of had a handle on pressure systems the last couple of years, maybe even the last 4 or 5. And now breath is like the new black in orthopedics.
It is.
And it cracks me up because I'm like,
the new black.
Hey, you know, breath, you know, everybody's been doing it for a long time.
Exactly.
You know?
Carrie's raising her hand in the corner like, this is not new, but at least everyone's doing it now. So
the beautiful thing is that, you know, no matter who you treat, and, you know, I'm looking at, you know, athletes, but I very much treat a pretty strong chronic pain population. Breath is so impactful there too, because of its effects on the sympathetic nervous system, what it does mobility wise, if you have GI issues, motility, so many things.
Yes.
I don't know where we lost that. but I'm glad we're coming back to it. But it makes me laugh every time. Exactly. Like, oh, are you doing diaphragmatic breathing or this or that? I'm like, just let people breathe. but how the pendulum swings. Yes. I mean, everybody's like, okay, diaphragmatic breathe, and I have patients say, so exactly, I should be diaphragmatic breathing all the time. And I'm like, no, because if you're going to run across the street and not get hit by the bus, you better not be doing Zen Buddha breath. Like, that's not going to work.
Right. Like, oh, I'm good.
So I think helping patients understand too, when they've been told, just do it this way or just do this all the time, I'm like, no, it depends on the demands of the task and the demands of, you know,
yes,
like my patient today, like she can deadlift like 220, 250. And one of the first rules that we're starting with, I said, for right now, for you, I don't want you to hold your breath unless you're underwater. I said, but it's temporary. Some patients I may always say to do that always because they're not going to do those heavy deadlifts. But if you're going to do a heavy deadlift and get 250 pounds off the ground and you're a woman, guess what? You're going to have to Valsalva and brace at some point in time, or that's not coming off the floor. But I think being comfortable with taking the rules and applying it to whatever situation is in front of you. There is no always other than if you don't have oxygen, you'll die. Like, that's really the only always. but the other thing too that I think is, I think it's getting better, is this idea that only people who do internal are pelvic floor therapists. And it's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, and just because you can put your finger in a warm, dark place doesn't,
exactly,
it doesn't make me special.
It doesn't mean you have to do it either. Also.
No, exactly. Like, and I have plenty of friends, and you know, Julie Weeb's kind of led the charge on that.
Yes, she really has.
You know, there's so much that we can learn from each other. And that's where I feel like, you know, having my ortho background really, you know, enhances my understanding of when I am doing internal, what am I actually trying to get out of that? And that was something I struggled with when I was kind of treating them as two separate entities for a really long time.
Yes.
But, you know, speaking, you know, as somebody trying to develop and grow this field, and also, you know, with my other president hat on, you know, just because you don't do internal doesn't mean that there's still not a lot to learn. And just because you do internal doesn't mean you shouldn't look at orthopedics and sports and not feel like there's things to learn there, because there's just so much that impacts and so much we have to learn.
So much, and just so much. It's the same, at the end of the day, also, it's the same human. So to divorce one system and one methodology from another, you're just like, you know, there's a reason that all of this stuff works. Something works for everyone. So let's try and learn as much as we can. And then we can best apply that to that person who's in front of us. Man, Carrie, you are packing a freaking powerful combo, man. You are like, it's so good. I mean, you kind of just dropped in there like, oh, I did a presentation with Lorimer Mosley. Like, that's another big deal.
That was cool. I'll admit, that was... that's when you pack up your husband and your baby. And I'll readily admit that the day that I presented was my son's birthday.
I mean, listen, that's how you celebrated it. Well, that's a big celebration.
Here's the thing. Like, he was, I think it was his third birthday. He doesn't remember.
He's going to remember. Exactly.
Before
remember
he
that.
Left. Now, if he listens to this years from now, he'll be like, Mom, what the hell? So, I mean, again, there's opportunities in your life that you never think would pop up. But, you know, to be able to spend time with him and kind of really at the infancy of understanding pain has been so much fun. And just being around people that are inspiring. Yes. He's just one of those people that I could just, you know, listen to for forever.
I mean, really, though.
Yeah.
Him, yeah. David, and Adrian. Oh, that's what you're saying. You're just like, man, I could just listen to this.
Yeah.
How has that been? I'm going to wrap it up soon. But how has that been treating chronic pain? I know that's actually something that I moved away from treating and pelvic floor because it was just too much for me to handle. Yeah. Like it's not easy. And it's, you know, I say this, I mean, this question up because we have all of this information at our fingertips, like you said, and the social media is incredible. And as a student, especially, you start learning about pain science. I didn't learn about it in school, but you start learning it maybe afterwards. You're seeing stuff on social media. Learning about it is very different than treating someone that has chronic pain.
Yeah.
It's usually different. And I found that it was too much. I was like, I can't do this. Not at a caseload of 70% with chronic pain. It was too much for me.
I would.
Like, how do you deal with that? How does that work for you?
It's funny. My second job back in upstate New York, I was in a rural hospital and I worked with this guy and we had a lot of Medicaid chronic you know, workers' comp, that sort of population, I remember people coming in, and at the time the big word was malingerer. And we would like run up the back stairs and watch them walk up to the mm-hmm. car and be like, oh, they're totally faking. And I feel so bad now because I just mm-hmm. not listening, not trying to understand where people were coming from. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, people with chronic pain, and you can spout all the research that you want about kind of understanding, but it's giving them space and time to connect with you to try and understand where they are. I mean, if you put yourselves in their shoes, it can be really overwhelming. And not that you don't have those patients that, you know, will suck you dry from every emotion in your body. Like, I couldn't treat like mm-hmm. 8 patients in a row of those. But I think what understanding all this kind of upcoming research and stuff over the years has helped with is at least giving people ownership over where they're going and what they're doing. And you're not going to win every single one. And I think being okay with that and giving patients the choice really kind of freed me a little bit from feeling obligated to find that path for them. I'm like, I can lay this out and give you my best estimate about where we can go with this. But at the end of the day, you have to have the accountability and commitment to it. I can help guide you on that too. You know, I hate using the word non-compliant. I won't use it. I'm like, part of my job is helping you find how this fits in and works. But, you know, I think just giving people a path, but not feeling like if they don't get better, it's on you. You know, and because it can be emotionally draining if you let it be, but yes. Saying, hey, you know what, let's do this together. This is the pathway, but this is what we're going to do. And if it sounds like something you can commit to, I'm happy to go along the path with you. And if it's not, then maybe now is not the right time. Not that I'm not the right therapist for you, but maybe now is not the right time. And being able to constantly reflect with patients, you know, and look back and say, you know what, 6 months ago, a year ago, you didn't think you could be here. And showing them, giving them a win, you know, and however small that looks like. So if you're trying to overcome something like chronic pain, it's overwhelming. But if you can find them small little wins and retrain that brain and say, hey, I've got an alternative that's working better. I think that's where it's much more palatable and you can kind of deal with it a little bit more.
That is such good advice. You guys out there listening, rewind this, hit that little button on there and listen to that again, because it's when you're actually in it and you're treating, and it can be hugely difficult. Yeah. So I think those are really profound words, and shifting that, because I think that's one of the things too, especially when you graduate, you think, because we go into this profession because we want to help people. You don't go in to make $1 million, let's be honest. You go into it to help people. And so you think you have to save everyone and help everyone. And if they don't get better, it's your fault. And you just take so much on. And that's really, really valuable advice. So... But I'm going to let you go, because you've been so great. I'm like amazed. This conversation was so...
Oh, this is fun. So this is, you know,
good.
Things like this are fun because you get a chance to pause and kind of be like, hey, all right, you know, this is... Yeah, I am doing all right.
Things are good. Right? Like, you're slaying, Gary. It's more than doing all right. You are slaying. You have any... I mean, that was actually really profound last words, but you have any last words that you'd like to leave the people with? Anything?
Probably the biggest thing I would say, I lied, 2 things.
I love it. Give me 4 things. That's fine.
I think if you think you want to do something, but you just don't know how, start. Because if you're waiting for everything to be perfect and exactly figured out, you will never make that step. So just start and, you know, learn from as many people as you can, talk to as many people. We don't bite, I swear to God. You know, just go. Because if you wait, it's not going to happen. And then I think the other thing, and this is something that really has become a message of mine, I think, in the last year, especially ACOG just came out with fourth trimester recommendations to include PT, which is massive. But once patients are postpartum, they're always postpartum. Yes, so,
postpartum,
you know, whether
forever.
You, exactly, yeah. when you're treating patients, whether it's orthopedic, neuro, I don't care what it is, there's always that kind of background and that filter to it. So, you know, whether you want to you know, be doing pelvic health or women's health or men's health or whatever, there's always that kind of overlay in the background with postpartum women. So remember that when you're treating patients. But I think that's it.
The things. Carrie, I mean, you've dropped so many knowledge bombs. People are going to want to learn more. If they wanted to contact you, find you, anything.
Yeah.
Besides the elevator in Vegas, how can they do that?
I don't think I have any trips to Vegas planned anytime soon. On Instagram, I am at Carrie Pagliano. On Twitter, it's CJ_PaglianoPT. My practice is Carrie Pagliano Physical Therapy, and website is CarriePagliano.com. I love emails. Please email me, Carrie@CarriePagliano.com, and Carrie is CARRIE. So trying to be consistent.
Man, you guys just got the direct line, got email.
You got
it. Whoa.
Yeah, the only thing you don't need is my cell now.
Well, exactly. Right? And Social Security is coming next.
Exactly.
You guys,
I have a lot of friends in CIA.
Dang. You guys listening, I will put all of that in the show notes, but clearly if you just Google Carrie Pagliano, all of that will come up. She's done some excellent cross-branding, keep things the same, makes it easy for everyone. But everything will go in the show notes, including all of the kind of links and information that she said earlier, some of the names she said earlier, some of the other PTs nearby. I'll put it all in the show notes to help you guys
awesome.
Out. It just makes things a little bit easier.
This was so fun.
Dude,
oh my gosh, this was
Carrie,
great.
You are thebomb.com. This was really, really good. I knew it was going to be good, but it's like, then you go and do it and you're like, damn, that was like really, really good. So thank you. Thank you for making the time.
Thank
you for doing what you're doing. Like I said earlier, it's really refreshing to see and hear who's at the helm and to know that things are headed in a good direction because they have a good leader. You got a great team behind you too, like you said, but your vision, your background, what you stand for, what you believe in is something that all of us are talking about now and wanting more of. So thank you for doing what you do. Truly.
Thanks,
thank you.
You too. Thanks for getting the word out, preaching the gospel.
Give me that soapbox. Give me a mic anytime, right?
Here
you go. Thank you so much, Carrie. And you guys listening, thank you. I know you could have been doing anything, but you chose to listen to us. And I appreciate that endlessly. If you liked the episode, give me some stars, please. If you loved it, subscribe and never miss a single thing. Until next time, my friends, Dr. Carrie Pagliano and Maestro, out.